Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and things continue to get worse just when you think they can't get any worse. In Japan, with the nuclear reactors, radiation levels at the number two reactor at the Fukushima Daiichi plant reached 1,000 millisieverts yesterday. That's the highest level yet recorded there. A dose that high could cause vomiting, hair loss, and diarrhea. And as workers continue to try to repair the crippled reactors, officials warned today that contaminated radioactive water may be flowing into the sea. As Japan and the world braces for the possible worst-case scenario of a nuclear meltdown, and as Greenpeace is now arguing for Japan to evacuate residents from a wider radius, the ripples of the disaster have reached energy industries across the globe, and the question of what's safe or safer or safest has been raised again. It's a question that Margaret Harding, a former GE vice president, now a nuclear energy consultant, raised when she was on our show a couple of weeks ago.
I look at the gas explosions that have occurred at operating gas plants that have killed dozens of people. I look at the effect of the coal industry and the people who die from the pollution of coal. And I look at the overall safety of the nuclear industry, even including Chernobyl, on a worldwide basis, is still far safer than any other power source we have when we take those measurements.
Well, that's a bracing claim. So how can we measure the risks to our health from different sources of energy? Joining me now to talk about the comparisons is David Biello, Associate Editor for Energy and the Environment at Scientific American. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
What do you think, first of all, of what Margaret Harding was saying in that clip? I don't know if it's apples and oranges or if it's, you know, Granny Smith's to Macintosh's or how you ever really do it. But as we start a conversation here about oil versus coal versus natural gas, even wind power, hydroelectric, electric, solar power, nuclear power, but they're all so different. How easily can we even compare the different kinds of energy sources when it comes to the dangers to human health?
It's actually pretty difficult, as you're highlighting there. I guess the main point is whether the risks you want to measure, it's kind of how you want to measure the risks. Do you want to measure it in terms of workers injured or killed? Do you want to measure it in terms of health risks, like the air pollution that she was referencing from coal-fired power plants and oil-burning cars? Do you want to measure it in uranium miners who lost their lives as a result of our need for uranium?
Right. So let's kind of run down a list a little bit, and let's start with nuclear. I mean, it's hard to compare disasters, not to mention it's a little creepy, but we've been hearing about Chernobyl and Three Mile Island as people try to determine what a total meltdown at Fukushima might look like in any of those reactors. What do we know about the exact death toll from Chernobyl?
Boy, is that a minefield. I guess the middle ground, the safest ground for me to be on, is about 9,000 people died as a result of Chernobyl. That is including the direct deaths, which is actually only a couple tens of people, and then the thousands of extra cancer deaths throughout Europe and primarily in Ukraine that resulted. Now, you will see some much larger numbers if you look at some other reference sources. Some of the Russian researchers would put that number into the hundreds of thousands. Some of the, let's say, nuclear industry researchers would put that number even lower. But I think 9,000 is about a safe estimate.
There's an author out there with a book right now who says that stress probably killed more people around Chernobyl than radiation did, and that we are so afraid of the effects of nuclear power that, and I don't know exactly how he crunched these numbers, but he says he believes there are more stress deaths in the area around Chernobyl than actual cancer deaths when you count that 9,000 or beyond.
Yeah, there's no question that the fear of radiation is paramount in these situations. You could see it a week or so ago when people in California were buying iodine pills, even though the levels of radiation likely to reach California were not at risk. It's the people in the immediate environs of Fukushima who have the most to fear. Stress is clearly bad for us, bad for our health. Any New Yorker can tell you that. Trying to tease out whether, though, stress is worse for you than, say, radioactive iodine that got into your thyroid gland is much more difficult, and I'd be cautious about that claim.
And how about even what you would expect from what we know is happening in Fukushima? Obviously, it's a huge threat to some of the workers who are involved in trying to, deal with the emergency. But what about to the people in the outlying areas, to the 19-mile evacuation zone or beyond? Do you expect, from what we know already has happened, extra general population deaths or illnesses as a result of Fukushima?
It depends on kind of where the radiation ends up. So obviously some radioactive iodine and cesium is getting into the environment. The question is whether people will somehow ingest that. That's the real danger. If you drink it, if you eat it, if it gets on your body and you don't wash it off immediately, that's where kind of bad effects start to occur. As long as you can avoid that, and that's why the Japanese government is encouraging people to stay indoors, not dry their clothes outside, that kind of stuff. If you can avoid these radioactive particles, you will be okay.
Let's move on from nuclear, and we'll come back by way of comparison to coal. Maybe the biggest culprit we think of for health and energy sources is probably burning coal. And Margaret Harding mentioned that in the clip as well. Estimates that we've seen are that hundreds of thousands of deaths are associated with burning coal, perhaps every year. Is that an accurate number, and what are those deaths from?
That is an accurate number. Those deaths are largely from air pollution. That is also exacerbated by the other fossil fuels that we burn. Oil burning promotes asthma right here in New York City, and is equally bad in places like California. It's the Central Valley. One in six kids has an asthma inhaler, largely because of fossil fuel burning. And in China, we're looking at hundreds of thousands of people who are impacted by air pollution that is so bad, smog that is so thick. Having been there, I can attest to this, that it's like smoking a couple of packs of cigarettes a day. And we all know how bad that is for you. So there's no question that coal is, quite frankly, a killer.
And listeners, we can take some phone calls. I see people are calling in already. We'll take some phone calls for David Biello from Scientific American as we compare the health risks from the different major energy sources. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So I guess if you live in China, you could probably say coal is much more hazardous to my health and much more risky for me than further development of nuclear power, even after Fukushima.
That is certainly the tack that the Chinese government is taking. They have the world's largest new nuclear power kind of build out. And in some ways, they're acting as a living laboratory for the rest of the world for a lot of these new and untested nuclear technologies. That's good in terms of getting off coal. It's maybe less good in the fact that some of the safety procedures, some of the construction oversight is not what you would want it to be with the nuclear industry. This is the problem with nuclear is actual deaths are very, very low. But the risks of a very large amount of deaths is always there, that you can't get rid of that. If Fukushima gets really bad or any nuclear plant melts down, there are a lot of deaths at stake.
And it also plays in to the risk perception category of what do we fear that's hazardous to us versus what do we not fear that's equally or more hazardous to us. So people in China probably don't walk around worrying about the air pollution from the coal every day in that palpable way. But when we hear about nuclear energy, we think, nuclear, what if? Right?
Yeah.
Just the same as when we get in our cars, we are not usually nervous about going for a drive. But when we get in an airplane, people generally have this little shudder when the plane is taking off or landing. And yet, statistically, you're much more likely to get in a crash in your car.
That's right. And actually, air pollution is accounts for more deaths than car accidents, drunk drivers, soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, all put together. If you add all those numbers up, air pollution deaths far outweigh that. But we don't really think about air pollution as a major health problem, but it is.
And where does oil come in? These days when we talk about pollution from oil, it seems like the whole conversation gets wrapped up in global warming. Are we neglecting another important conversation from the burning of oil that pertains more directly to human health on the ground?
There's no question. Burning oil in our cars and in our trucks most particularly produces what's called fine particulate matter. That's the stuff that when you breathe it in, it's going to cause asthma. It's going to cause all kinds of cardiovascular problems. This is not stuff that you want to be breathing, but we expose ourselves to it every day. This is why asthma rates in places like with highways passing through are so high. It is a chronic and, let's say, under-invested in health problem.
Let's take a phone call. Dale in New Rochelle. You're on WNYC. Hello, Dale.
Hi, I think you kind of killed me with some of your data about the deaths and problems associated with carbon dioxide. But I did hear that the EPA has confirmed that 17,000 deaths a year are attributable to coal-fired power plants. And those are just deaths. They don't mention all of the other ailments that are going to go along with it, all the GI ailments, everything else. It's a neurotoxin. And also on the periphery with oil, it doesn't mention all of the dirty little secrets we get involved with other governments, with Saudi Arabia, all the things that are tolerated around the world just for access to oil that we just accept every day. We have this big monster out there called nuclear that I'm not defending, but it seems like maybe the China syndrome or just a few things has scared people to the point where they're scared of something where the deaths are not even measurable compared to what coal and oil are, and it just doesn't seem to match up with the actual tangible damage.
Dale, thank you very much. Is that where you come down, or do you come down somewhere, David? Do you find yourself kind of rooting for the impetus to build new nuclear plants in this country, which there was an impetus? Democrats were getting on board. President Obama was getting on board, certainly. Some environmentalists were getting on board because global warming had become such an overwhelming priority in the environmental community, and nuclear doesn't contribute to that. Do you find yourself rooting for, you know, despite Fukushima, to not have the whole industry get frozen for another 30 years like happened after Three Mile Island in this country because of all these comparative risks that we're talking about?
I don't know about rooting. The nuclear industry has, unfortunately, a long track record of, let's say, being less than forthcoming with information. And that has led to what I think is the primary crisis facing the nuclear industry beyond Fukushima, but it's demonstrated by Fukushima. It's trust. We don't trust them. And the reason is because their economic interests are not aligned with our health interests. Their economic interests are to run the plant as much as possible, to potentially not maintain it as safely as possible in order to get the most money out of it. Our health interest is that the plants don't melt down. Now, we all want the electricity. If Indian Point, which is our local nuclear power plant, went away, New York City would in an instant lose 30% of its electricity. That would take out a lot of the lights that we all rely on, that we're relying on to listen to the radio right now. It's not something that I want to see go away, but it's also something that I want to see done correctly.
David Biello from Scientific American, as we compare the health risks of various major energy sources. I know you want to talk about hydroelectric power, which generally gets placed in the renewable category because it comes from water. And yet you say this may have among the biggest potentials for fatalities?
There's no question that if a dam goes down, that will kill more people than any other power source. We're talking about the equivalent of the tsunami that hit Japan kind of racing down a river valley and sweeping all before it. This has happened before in history. There were many dam breaks in China, again, that killed literally hundreds of thousands of people. And any time a dam breaks, there are severe consequences. It is the most risky energy source, but it's not one that we tend to be afraid of.
1975, Banshao, is that how you say it? Reservoir Dam, overcome by a flood. It killed about 26,000 people. Over 140,000 people are thought to have died from disease and starvation as a result of that disaster. And yet, most people listening now probably never heard of it until this minute.
That's right. And we don't worry about it at all. But actually, we have a very old and still aging dam infrastructure in this country. And some of those dams are in earthquake-prone areas. If, you know, heaven forfend, something goes wrong and one of those dams breaks, we're looking at a serious disaster.
Marilyn in Cortland Manor, 2 miles from Indian Point. You're on WNYC. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Brian. Nice to hear from you, and nice to hear you doing this topic.
Thanks for hearing from you, letting us hear from you.
Well, there are two points I'd like to make. One is that electricity is a commodity, and people who think, oh, it's first of all, in our area, it's not 30%. There's figures for that, but never mind. The point I really want to make is that if AMP goes broke, we don't run around saying, where are we going to get our food? We go buy it at ShopRite. And because electricity is a commodity, we can do the same thing with electricity, and the market already is. The market's replacing energy, bringing energy, and we have a surplus now, and this is a great time to phase out nuclear. And the other thing is you got to put something in the equation for the environment. That power plant at Indian Point and many other power plants along rivers in this country are killing the rivers. 40-foot pipe intake with all billions and billions of fish that get sucked in, the fry and the eggs, and the outtake of the output of thermal pollution. So that's got to figure in the equation somewhere. It's like too expensive to afford to try to get our electricity this way. Never mind the radioactive waste.
Why do you stay living 2 miles from Indian Point?
Sorry, say again?
You say you live 2 miles from Indian Point. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Why do you stay? You don't have enough fear of things that could happen there to move away.
You know, I think I have a responsibility to make my community better. And my life is here. My roots are here. My friends are here. My job was here. My retirement is here. And why should I run away? There's no place to hide. There's no running place. Go and live next to another nuclear power plant somewhere else?
Marilyn, thank you so much. And she talks about the environmental consequences on an ongoing basis of nuclear energy, which people don't think about very much. It's either accident or no accident. But, of course, the river, the heat in the river is an issue that people debate.
Absolutely. And one of the big issues facing the nuclear industry is that folks like our governor and some folks in the federal government want to make them add cooling towers to cut down on that effect. But that's not a problem just for nuclear. That's a problem for any power source that requires heat. So we're talking coal, natural gas, and nuclear for the most part. They kill a lot of fish.
Carolita wrote on our comments page, this is a good sarcastic comment, I think. It says, please tell me about the health risks of solar energy. I'm very worried.
Well, as long as you're not a roofer or not engaged in the production of the actual silicon that goes into those photovoltaic cells, you should be okay. But if you are a roofer or you are engaged in the silicon production, there actually are some pretty significant risks. And if we want to talk about environmental damage, there is a lot of dumping of silicon manufacture byproducts in places like China that actually do have some pretty significant health risks.
And Brian in Newark has a solar question. Brian, you're at WNYC.
Yes, actually my question kind of touches on the point you were just making. I've heard before, and I kind of wanted to get confirmation or just an opinion on the fact that the production of solar PVC cells creates enough pollution to where it might actually offset the benefits that one would gain by using PVC cells as a clean, renewable energy resource?
That is not true. You can actually make it back. If we're talking about carbon dioxide, you can make it back in a couple of years at most, and often much, much shorter. The pollution that I'd be more worried about is kind of the byproducts of manufacturing the silicon, and that's stuff that gets dumped in the water and in the soil and then gets kind of drunk or eaten.
So if we had a commercially viable mass solar energy industry, do you think we'd be having all kinds of serious debates about polluting byproducts that obviously we're not having now because it's just not happening on a widespread basis?
I think that's for sure. As any kind of energy source gets to scale, the problems start to, let's say, come out of the woodwork. Look at wind. It's still not a huge amount of U.S. electricity, but it's getting pretty big. Those wind farms are massive. People don't like them in their backyards. They do often have kind of unfortunate environmental impacts, like killing birds and killing bats. Not as much as our buildings, mind you, but they do have those impacts. And people don't like it as it gets to scale.
There's something called wind turbine syndrome.
Yes, although I haven't been able to find any actual evidence that it exists. But certainly people who have them in their, some of the people who have them in their backyards have complained of kind of low frequency noise and health effects resulting from that. Perhaps it's stress.
But if we were able to get up to mass production of energy from wind or solar, there wouldn't be the same kind of health effects that we see from coal or oil or potential disasters that we see from nuclear, would there?
There's no question that fossil fuels are by far the worst. Burning anything just has a slew of toxic byproducts. We'd already talked about the air pollution. We haven't talked about coal ash and all the other things that we have to kind of get rid of when we burn these massive amounts of coal. It is nearly 50% of our energy, of our electricity supply. And we need it right now, but transitioning away from it, there's no question that there would be significant health benefits associated with that. And I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars in health savings.
On the economic level as well as the human health benefits. All right. Well, the debate goes on. And after the immediate emergency is over at Fukushima, it certainly will go on and on with respect to nuclear. And there's some more context for you folks about the health risks of various energy sources from David Biello, Associate Editor for Energy and the Environment at Scientific American. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this hour, a memoir of being Aspergian, as the author calls himself. And we'll take your calls remembering Geraldine Ferraro and also talk about how President Obama forgave her for a 2008 low blow during the presidential campaign. Stay tuned.